Hello and welcome to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm Spike Friedman. Grant Goldberg is not alongside me. This is my first time saying the words welcome to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, as he's the one who normally says that. But we've got a big week three matchup between two teams that are maybe not what they were 2 years ago, but are still quite interesting. And in order to break it down and preview it, we've got from Cowboys Wire, Sean Kirshner. And also a little background before I fully introduce Sean, a former theater professor of mine. Sean, how are you?
I'm great. It's always great to sit down and talk to you. After talking theater for so many years, it's fun. It's good that we can finally drop the masks and talk what we really want to talk about, which is football.
And to be clear, it's a literal mask that we're talking about dropping.
Absolutely.
Because Sean did teach me in Commedia dell'arte.
That's right.
We're going to start today's episode diving into what is going to happen when the now much maligned Seahawks offense has the ball. Sean, let's just start with the Cowboys defensive line. It looks really impressive. The Seahawks offensive line, maybe a little better than it has been the last 2 years, still holds a couple injuries, potentially holding it back. How effective do you think Dallas is going to be against the Seahawks this weekend? And what is making them so effective right now?
You know, it's funny because for so many years, this team was so offense focused. And in fact, if you remember, the last great Cowboys Seahawks game that was in Seattle was in 2014. And the whole MO then for the Cowboys was run the ball with DeMarco Murray, possess the ball, you know, dominate in time of possession to keep that shoddy defense off the field. And that defense was made up of a bunch of, you know, I mean, there were waiver wire guys all along the defensive line. But throughout the last 4 or 5 years, they have quietly and heretofore largely unsuccessfully invested in the defensive line. You know, there's a bunch of first and second round picks. There's a couple guys they picked up, you know, off of other teams' practice squads, who, like David Irving, who is a monster. And there's been an amazing amount of suspensions and things like that on the Cowboys defensive line. So they've never really had a chance to come together. And many of us are talking about this is the year when that long-term investment in the defensive line, where they've been trying for years to get more of a pass rush, because the pass rush for the Cowboys has been the primary target for losses to the Packers in the 2014 playoffs and 2016 playoffs, et cetera. Is ultimately, like, we couldn't generate enough of a pass rush to affect Aaron Rodgers, and therefore, you know, kept the Packers in the game so he could win at the end in both years. And so, you know, we've been lamenting and pulling out hair at the lack of a pass rush, and then continue to do so because guys like Randy Gregory or David Irving or even Tank Lawrence were either suspended or injured or something. And now suddenly they're all coming together. So it's not only the investment in the defensive line. That's a significant part of it. But there's an investment in the linebacking, where suddenly they have an amazing group of fast, physical, deep linebacking room. So the front seven for the Cowboys is better than it's been, I mean, since maybe 2008, 2009, if not that, then maybe even like 1993 or something. So this is really all the talk in Cowboy circles is, it's kind of like, holy S, look at what has just happened. Like overnight, suddenly all these investments are all suddenly returning all at the same time. So it's a pretty exciting time for us on this side of the ball. You know, we'll talk about the lack of excitement on the other side of the ball in a minute. But I think that the real key for us, you know, the Cowboys are coming off a game in which they sacked Eli Manning six times. The Giants, not unlike the Seahawks, are having some struggles and have for several years had some struggles in the offensive line. And so, you know, Cowboy fans are kind of licking their chops at looking at the prospect of a second consecutive game against a team with an offensive line that continues to be in sort of building mode. To us, though, the real X factor is Russell Wilson and the fact that he's infinitely more mobile than a guy like Eli Manning, who's basically a sitting duck. If you can beat your guy, he's not going to move from, and you can just basically target him. Whereas I think that it's a lot less likely this week that guys will be pinning their ears back and just trying to get upfield, because the concern then is that Russell Wilson will make them pay for doing that. So I think that, you know, there's a chance the Cowboys defensive line could take this game over, but I also think that there's a real chance that a lot of that could be negated by the fact that your quarterback is so good in the pocket, so good at throwing on the move, so good at making teams pay, especially since, you know, the Cowboys have been, you know, they're playing a lot more man these days. So there's going to be, you know, defensive backs with their back to the quarterback. So I think maintaining laying integrity is probably the watchword in Cowboys defensive meetings this week. And as a result, as yourself, when you have a team that is capable of a fierce pass rush, but they're going up against a guy who's really mobile, oftentimes that, you know, they sort of call off the dog, so to speak, because they're a little worried about getting hurt. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Cowboys go about that. I think they're going to put pressure on Russ, and they're going to probably beat their guys and win a lot of matchups. Whether that actually has the effect of like altering the game or not, I'm a little on the fence about that. I think that it might be that, you know, he can do a lot just with his presence and also, you know, with his legs to kind of equalize that potential advantage the Cowboys have.
Yeah, it's been interesting interesting is a euphemism for what Brian Schottenheimer has brought to this offense. And there's been a lot of criticism of his play calling last week up against what is admittedly a very good Bears defense, but also 78 yards through three quarters is pretty poor no matter how you slice it, especially moving away from a run game that the Seahawks had aggressively said they were going to recommit to. So my question is, we know that the Cowboys pass rush is at another level. We know you've got a really mobile linebacking core that's going to give the Seahawks issues if they, you know, try to lean on Will Disley again or try to lean on running backs in the passing game. But in terms of your run defense, you were effective against Saquon Barkley on a per-snap basis last week. How confident are you feeling overall if the Seahawks do pick this week to start trying to run the ball, especially with a guy like Chris Carson, who's a physical and fast running back?
I think, frankly, that that's probably where the Seahawks have the best chance of winning. If they're going to have to stay ahead of the chain, so to speak. You know, this is like the new sort of like hot watchword term in NFL circles, is staying ahead of the chains. And it's really just about making manageable third downs. And I think that if there's a place where the Cowboys are a little bit vulnerable, it's in the running game, and particularly like an interior run. So if you want to try to run wide on this linebacker unit, especially with the fact that we have two pretty big and physical corners who, thanks to Chris Richard's tutelage, are very eager to come up and force outside runs. I think it's going to be difficult for a team to really, you know, make hay running outside. You know, the Rod Marinelli system is one that values speed over size. And so the Cowboys defensive tackles are a little undersized. I think that, where the Cowboys have been vulnerable defensively is against teams that can run it inside a little bit. I'm talking about the last few years, even with this in this scheme more generally. And if teams can run it inside a little bit, I think it tends to slow down the pass rush a little bit. So, you know, to me, I feel like, yeah, if the Seahawks are going to make the Cowboys pay, it's going to be because they're going to have some success, particularly in first and second downs in the running game. And if that doesn't happen, if the Cowboys are able to get a lot of penetration and really disrupt the running game, I think it's going to be tough, because the other component is that, and you know this guy very, very well,
yeah,
is that probably the most valuable offseason addition has been Chris Richard. He's transformed the back seven. He's sort of, you know, reorganized the defensive backfield personnel. He's moved Byron Jones from a kind of safety role to a very physical kind of corner role. And he's, you know, Byron Jones is a guy who's like 6'1", 205, very athletic, probably more suited to the kind of physical, you know, bump at the line kind of style like that the Seahawks have played for so long. And he and Chidi Awuzie, who are their starting corners, are playing incredibly well. The whole defensive backfield has been playing really well. They've been playing really well against the run. And so I think it's going to be really difficult if the Seahawks are in a lot of like third and long type of situations, because guys aren't really getting open. I mean, that's part of it too. So I think that while Russ can, I think, hurt the Cowboys with his feet, you can't expect that to happen on a, you know, regular, like third down to third down to third down. Like, he can't be converting third downs by himself. And so I think that he's going to have to be in manageable third downs where other guys can make plays if they're going to, if they're going to be consistent. One of the things the Cowboys do really well is not give up big plays. I think the Seahawks are going to have to find ways to execute and engineer, you know, at least 2 or 3 8-to-10 play drives over the course of the game if they're going to, you know, if they're going to, I think, have a great chance of success.
Yeah, and it is a real issue for us going up sort of in a mirror battle with Chris Richard running your guys' defense. And so my last question on the defensive side of the ball, and you already touched on it a little bit, talking about converting an athletic safety, and Byron Jones isn't just athletic. We're all fans of Zach Whitman here.
He's
the Three Sigma guy. He's the guy.
Right.
My question is, how much are Seahawks fans going to recognize what they're up against this week? Is this Chris Richard defense looking like a Seahawks defense? Are there tweaks? Are there differences? What have you seen so far in terms of what Chris Richard has implemented for you guys?
Yeah, I think actually there's a lot of similarities. You know, I think that, so we're seeing a lot of physical, much higher percentage of man, single high safety, physical play at the line with the corners. We're seeing a lot more blitzing from the linebackers, or at least, actually, let me take that back. I don't think the Cowboys are actually blitzing it up with a higher percentage of, like, you know, per play in terms of blitzing, but they're being much, much more effective and efficient with their blitzes. So they're getting home a lot more. And I really think that a lot of that has to do with Richard also. One of the hot topics in Dallas this week is to ask Jason Garrett, who's actually calling the defensive plays? And I think the answer is actually Richard. I think what's happening is that Richard's been given the defensive play chart, and that Rod Marinelli is sort of giving him suggestions and some guidance, but that Richard's, I think, in many ways being groomed to be the defensive coordinator next year. And that, you know, some Cowboy fans are desperately hoping, because he's a fiery dude, that he'll be the head coach in 2 years' time.
Oh, wow.
So I think that, you know, you're going to see something that feels very familiar. I really do, especially as it pertains to the back seven. I think if there's any difference at all, it's in what I was saying earlier, which is that it seems like the Seahawks have tended to have at least one dude who was a little bit of a beefier guy, presence along the defensive line, and the Cowboys are generally 310 pounds or lighter, even at defensive tackle. So to me, that's the one difference. But you know, they've been trying to build a Seahawks style defense for years. Here, this takes us back to the beginning of this conversation. You know, they have 8 to 10 guys on the defensive line they rotate, and they come in waves. They have six linebackers who all run like deer. They come in waves. They got three big corners who play in the nickel. And, you know, a couple of athletic fleet safeties. So I think there's going to be a lot that you'll see that's familiar, I think.
Okay. Oh, and I said that was the last question. I lied. This is going to be a really quick one.
Okay.
Do you guys need Earl Thomas? Like, do you feel the absence? You just mentioned the safeties. Do you feel the absence of, like, a truly elite free safety in what you guys are doing? Or is this, like, do you want him? Do you want him, and do you need him? Because I don't want to give them to you, to be clear.
So this is a really this has been the hotly debated issue, tiresomely so, for months. In the entire offseason in Dallas, it's all been like, you know, when it leaked out that the Seahawks and Cowboys might have talked during the draft at some point. We're talking about a second round draft pick for Earl. Everybody's been in you know, conniptions ever since. I think probably the Cowboys have a lot less interest than most fans do. I think the Cowboys wouldn't mind doing that at the right price, because obviously Earl Thomas is better than whoever they have, you know, who's going to be Xavier Woods probably, who they got last year in the draft. But I think that what you're gesturing toward here is really interesting, and I'm probably absolutely right, which is I'm not sure this defense needs Earl Thomas. Now, would he upgrade the defense? Of course. But I don't look at this defense and say, wow, look how many big plays they're giving up over the top. If only they had, you know, a free safety who could cover more ground. You know, I'm not sure that, frankly, at this juncture, they need him. And I also don't think that the Cowboys, who have tended to be a lot more conservative in terms of their personnel decisions in the last 4 or 5 years, as Stephen Jones, the son of Jerry Jones, has sort of ascended to the de facto GM position, I don't think that they would ever give up assets for a guy who's 29. Even if he's playing awesome at 29, he's still clearly an elite player. But I think that they're very reluctant to give up assets for guys who are approaching 30. And so I don't know that the Cowboys are really truly interested in Earl Thomas, to be honest with you.
No, it makes sense. It makes sense. And again, I think it's a situation I don't want him to leave. And we're going to talk about that when we get back. Comparably to the Seahawks, perhaps, anemic Cowboys offense against a decimated Seahawks defense. Stay excited. We'll be back right after this. Sean Kerschner, Spike Friedman, Locked On Seahawks. Guys, ever since we started this podcast, people ask us for advice. And a lot of that advice is about gambling on football. Makes sense. We're a football podcast on the Locked On Seahawks. And the truth is, I don't know who's going to win. You know, I'm going to pick this game later. I'm not even going to pick the Seahawks. What's wrong with me? But I am going to tell you that if you think you know better than me, and you're a good Seahawks fan who doesn't think we're going to choke away a game at the Cowboys late, you should go on my bookie and back up your knowledge by betting on football. They are your best bet this season. They've been in business for years. They have great reviews online. They have the easiest to use MyBull site. They pay out reliably. You can lay down cash, win big today. You can trust them. I would only recommend a service that's been good to me, and it has. I bet on MyBookie. I've gotten paid out on MyBookie. So I'm urging you to use MyBookie, because when you win, they pay. And they have in-game live betting, and they have over-unders on fantasy points for individual players. So there's all sorts of different angles you can take if you bet on MyBookie. So if you're joined now, new account on MyBookie, they will match your deposit dollar for dollar. And if you do it after 4 p.m., and use the promo code LOCKEDON25, they'll add an extra $25 on a $100 plus deposit. So go to MyBookie, MyBookie, and use the promo code LOCKEDON25. You play, you win. MyBookie, you get paid. All right, we are back. Locked On Seahawks podcast, talking Cowboys Seahawks. Now we're talking about what's going to happen when the Cowboys have the football. And I think that all starts with Dak Prescott. We are in an incredibly deep quarterback talent NFC, and the Seahawks just came through maybe the worst of the starting quarterbacks in the NFC in Mitch Trubisky, which is saying something, because Mitch Trubisky is not a disaster for the Bears. And maybe you guys are coming through the other of the worst quarterbacks in the NFC in Eli Manning. And I feel like people rank Prescott all over the place, from third to worst to like fifth or sixth best even. Like, where do you think Prescott is now? And do you think he is the Cowboys' answer at quarterback going forward?
Boy, that's a tough one. I think one of the reasons why he's ranked so divergently is because the things he does well, he does really well. And the things he struggles with, continue to really be struggles. And I think where you rank him in many ways depends on which of those quarterback characteristics you value most. So the things he does well, he is a terrific leader week to week. He's a great guy in the locker room. He has a charismatic presence. He rallies dudes around him. So all of those kind of leadership intangibles he has in spades, and did from the moment the plane landed in Dallas. He's really amazing at like sort of executing ball fakes and all of that sort of ball handling stuff. He's incredible. He's really, really good with his feet, and he's pretty good in the pocket. He also struggles with mechanics. He struggles with accuracy, in part because of the fact that he struggles with mechanics. And I think the thing that is really the question that ultimately is going to decide whether he becomes, one of those sort of top four or five NFC type quarterbacks, or always kind of sits there in the fat middle, is can he start finding ways to find receivers and for intermediate and deep passes? So, you know, you look at his passing chart every Monday, and it's dotted with all kinds of like passes in the 5 to 10 to 12 yard range, very few passes intermediate range, and very few deep passes. And it's not that he's like significantly unsuccessful at those ranges. He's just not attempting passes at those ranges. And so what that means is for defenses who already see that the running game is the thing that is the most sort of anxiety producing element of the Cowboys offense, if you're not threatening them over the top, they're just going to pack the box. So in the last 10 games or so, we've seen a lot of eight-man fronts. We've seen a lot of teams who have just said, you know what? Go ahead. Let Dak try to beat us. Because, you know, we were saying earlier in the conversation, the Seahawks are probably going to have to execute a lot of sustained 8 to 10 play drives. This is what the Cowboys have had to do the last couple of years. So when Tony Romo was the quarterback and DeMarco Murray was the running back in 2014, for example, they had that really, really elite, dangerous running game. But if you wanted to crowd the box, Tony Romo was going to beat you intermediate or deep, you know, and he had a couple of receivers who could do that. That's not the case in Dallas, right? So the Cowboys are never going to be able to take full advantage of Ezekiel Elliott, and you know the sort of investment in him, you know, with the number four overall draft pick in 2016, unless Dak can get guys to peel back a little bit, because there's some fear of an intermediate deep passing game. Now, one of the things he does really well is he's incredibly good with the ball in terms of like not turning it over. He's very careful with the ball. He's you know, his touchdown to interception ratio has been stellar even during the kind of dry spell he's had. It's still very good. You know, he's had a really, really strong first 2 years. Some people say he's had the strongest first 2 years of just about any quarterback in history. That said, since the middle of last year, when a couple of guys got injured and the Cowboys offense kind of hit a lull, they are still quite evidently in this lull. So that lull is going on about 9-10 games now. And so people used to say, okay, well, there were guys who were injured. The real Dak Prescott is the guy we saw the first 24 games. Well, now the question is, has the league caught up to Dak Prescott, and is this the guy we've seen the last 10 games? And I think that the jury is still out on that. You know, This Dak Prescott also doesn't have Jason Witten and Dez Bryant playing well. You know, so there's a lot of variables in a very complex equation that is offensive football, and it's really hard to pinpoint because those variables have changed. You know, Travis Frederick is not in. Last year, you know, like, Dez Bryant was injured and Jason Witten was 105 years old and Tyron Smith was out and Zeke was suspended and all these things were happening. So these variables are always kind of changing so rapidly. It's really hard to pinpoint what the true story of Dak is. And so the story is all these things I just told you. He is all these things. He's a complicated player. And I don't know. I do think, however, that what we're going to see more and this sort of maybe anticipating one of your other questions, which is what is the Cowboys offense going to look like on Sunday? And my answer is, I think we're going to see more of that kind of quote unquote college offense. I think that's where Dak is most comfortable. I think we're going to see a lot more, run pass options. I think we're going to see a lot more of him running the ball. I think we're going to see, you know, a lot more spread. I just think that that's where he can be more effective. I think we're going to see more tempo. I think the sort of like deliberate, take up time and try to dominate time of possession offense that he inherited that was working really well in 2014 and 15. I think ultimately that doesn't play to his strength. So I think that, you know, over the course of this year, if they're going to get better offensively, I think it's going to be because they begin to let go of some of that and begin to go to more of this, you know, this sort of thing that's quote unquote college style offense.
Yeah, and I guess college-style offense also helps mitigate the absence of weapons on the passing game. Is there a guy, before we dive into the offensive line and running game, is there a guy in the passing game that is even okay? Like because I look at it and I'm like, oh boy, it's the rare group of passing options that with even Doug Baldwin out for the Seahawks, I'm like, I think we have better passing options still. I think like Tyler Lockett's still better than anybody you got, which is not great for y'all. Is there one guy that I should be afraid of?
Probably not. If we were playing week 9, I might say Michael Gallup, the rookie, who had a terrific camp. But he's, you know, like most rookies, he had a terrific camp and then kind of leveled off. And you know, last couple games, he's just been like, okay. I think he's going to be the team's best receiver by midseason. Or at least I was predicting that in camp. I'm pulling back on that now, having seen his, you know, the sort of inevitable rookie leveling. So frankly, the answer, and I'm embarrassed to say this is the answer, is Tavon Austin. Oh, he's the guy who has the most explosive potential.
I'm going to cut you. You don't have to say any. I'm not going to make you compliment Tavon Austin anymore. We can just get to the running game.
Well, you know, I mean, you faced him, right? I mean, those years against the Rams, I'm sure he was a non-entity for many times, but there's probably two times he had an amazing play that, like, you know, blew open a play or helped win a game or whatever for the Rams. But for the most part, like, he doesn't do anything. So the question then is going to be, which of those games is he going to have?
Oh, you know, God. You're living that Tavon Austin lifestyle. You're living that Jeff Fisher lifestyle at that point. That's not a good lifestyle to be living in. I'm sorry, but you do have a great running back in Ezekiel Elliott, but your offensive line is not what it was over the past couple of years. What is the current state of the Dallas running game overall? How do you feel about it, and how impactful do you think it's going to be this Sunday?
I think that it's not as good, obviously, as it was in 16. And I think there's a couple reasons for that. One is the things I was just talking about, which is that there's a much higher percentage of eight-man boxes that they're seeing. So, like, the percentage of eight-man fronts that they saw in, like, 16, I think I saw recently, was something around 35-37%, and now it's, like, 54%. So it's significantly higher. Teams are just saying, we're not going to let this element of your offense beat us because we're not scared of the other one. That's compounded by the fact that Travis Frederick is out, mm-hmm. that they have a rookie who I think is actually going to be quite good in Connor Williams at left guard. But I will also say that the guy who's subbing for Travis Frederick has been pretty damn good. Joe Looney has been their best backup when Frederick was playing, you know, during camp before he was diagnosed with this strange sort of autoimmune condition that he has. It was very clear that the sixth best offensive lineman on the team was Joe Looney. He's acquitted himself well. I will say, frankly, and this is not something that many people are talking about, but I will say that I really miss Doug Free. Doug Free was a sort of quiet guy. He was he got beat a couple times a game, you know, and so a lot of Cowboy fans were always sort of shaking their fist at him. But I think that he's much better overall, snap to snap to snap, than Lael Collins. So Lael Collins is a guard who's playing right tackle. I think he's got a lot of the power elements at right tackle. He's a good athlete, but he's not a great foot athlete in space, and Doug Free was that. So, like, if you have the kind of right defensive end who used to be a left defensive end that we're seeing a lot now that the Cowboys actually have in a guy like DeMarcus Lawrence.
Yeah.
Lael Collins is susceptible to being beaten because he's so worried about being beaten outside. He's particularly vulnerable to, like, inside moves. If you, like, you know, start to go upfield and then cut in, you can beat him. And he's not as effective in the running game. I just don't – he's good, but he's not as good as Doug Free. So they have actually diminished at three different positions right now. I think they're really strong at right guard, really strong at left tackle. I think they're diminished at the other three positions. Those guys are all fine. They're solid, you know. They might be better than any guys on the Seattle offensive line. I don't know.
We got one who's at that level in Dwayne Brown. We got one.
But yeah, exactly.
But
it's not that they're not good. It's just that they're only okay. So they're gonna give up some. And so, as you know from offensive line play, the thing that's so maddening about it is four of your dudes can win the snap, and one guy doesn't, and the play gets blown up. You know, and it's really frustrating.
Ah, the classic Jermaine Effetti. Yes.
Absolutely right. Right. The other four guys do their job, and Effetti gets beat, and some guy beats him inside, and suddenly the whole play's wrecked. And so this kind of thing is happening a lot more in Dallas in the last year and a half or so. They're a solid run blocking line. They're a spotty pass blocking line. So I think they can be beaten. I think they can be beaten, and I think the Cowboys coaches know that, and so that's one of the reasons why if you can get the Cowboys in third and long, you're in a really good position because they're going to go conservative. They're not going to expose Dak Prescott to slow developing plays that will convert third and longs. They'd rather throw underneath and hope a guy breaks a tackle. So you know, if you can win on first and second down, you're going to be in really good shape.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. I've got good news for you. The Seahawks have no top-tier pass rushers, so mazel tov to you.
You're not going
to
put him in that category?
Yeah. Look, Frank Clark is fine. Deion Jordan, I don't even know what Deion Jordan is. I mean, he can be very good. I just want Cliff Avril back so badly. But we don't have Cliff Avril, but we do have a game on Sunday, and we're going to have to pick it. So we're going to take one more really quick break, come back. Sean and I are going to pick this game. I'm going to pick it for Grant, too, even though he didn't tell me what he wanted me to do. I'm going to pick it for him. I'm going to channel his energy also. So get excited for me to channel Grant Goldberg and get a couple more picks for this game on Sunday right after this Locked On Seahawks podcast. All right, we are back, Locked On Seahawks, with Sean Kerschner of Cowboys Wire, and also being my theater professor. But it is time for us to pick some games. Sean, I'm going to let you go first. It is the Seahawks' first home game. These are two middling offenses with interesting mobile quarterbacks and two sort of similar defenses. So there's a lot of similarities here. How do you see this one playing out?
I'm going to say 13-10 Seahawks.
Oh, boy. Yes. Oh,
I really suffering. Think I really think that, like, if there's a team that can get a turnover on the plus side of the field, that's going to be the play that determines the game.
So that's a great pick. I'm going to channel Grant, and Grant is going to assume that the Seahawks linebacking core is healthier. We've got a full Bobby Wagner. He's going to assume Michael Kendricks can do really well in that KJ Wright role, and that's going to limit explosive runs. He's going to think Dallas is going to get 13 Seahawks. He just for no reason thinks the Seahawks are going to put up 24, and he's insane. So Grant's going to pick this game 24-13. I saw what Denver was able to do to the Seahawks defense late, and the lack of depth along the defensive line. And the potential that, and this is a weird thing, and I don't even know if I believe it, but like the potential that the Seahawks are going to be consistently giving the Cowboys long fields with Michael Dixon is scary to me, because Ezekiel Elliott is going to wear down our defensive line. We lost Tom Johnson to a bunch of roster rigmarole this week. We're obviously down a bunch of guys. Puna Ford's got to step up. Nas Jones has got to step up. They've got to play at a really high level if we're going to sustain over the whole game. I'm picking it 14-13 Cowboys, and it's going to be a long, just devastating fourth quarter drive with Ezekiel Elliott running it down our throats after we contained him through three quarters. That's going to do it, and then Brian Schottenheimer on our chance to answer is going to call a play that's just Russell Wilson putting the ball on the ground and walking off the field for some reason. So I'm gonna predict an 0-3 start to the Seahawks season. I hate that. I hope that me channeling Grant is correct. But thank you so much for coming on, Sean. Is there anything you'd like to plug before we end this episode?
Not really. I mean, like, you know, if you're interested in what's going on with the Cowboys, come check us out on the Cowboys Wire. But, you know, I like writing there, but I'm not like particularly proud of my work. So I will say though that you, my friend, are a Three Sigma analyst.
Oh, wow. Wow. That is the highest praise I've ever gotten from a former professor. So I'm going to really absorb that. I'm going to give a little bit of credit to PFF, because they've been sending us, everybody on the Locked On Sports Network has just been getting their reports for free this year, which has been awesome. So I'm a little smarter. I'm able to bring a little more data into what I'm doing. There's Locked On College podcasts right now. You can listen to those and be smart about college football if you like college football. If you like this podcast, rate and review it. And hassle Grant for having like a job and a life outside of this. And he's at Grant Goldberg. I'm at Spike Friedman. Sean, you're at Rabble Rouser. How do you spell that?
RABBLEROUSR.
Yeah, that is slightly difficult to spell. But thank you again to Sean. Thank you for listening. And for the Locked On Seahawks podcast, I am Spike Friedman signing off.